ओमज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्मिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण। So I hope all of you are keeping well and that all of you are in cheerful Krishna consciousness. I'm very happy to be able to discuss this most sublime text, Sri Brahma Samhita, with all of you. This is our second session. In the first session, last time, last Saturday, I gave an overview and an introduction to the text, and we briefly discussed the first text, which is the most important text of the or text verse of the entire book, the Brahma Samhita. So I will not repeat that which I have discussed last time. So can I request that the slides that we concluded with last time are put up on the screen. The text that basically gave the verse, and the slide that gave the verse, the first verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Can that be put up?
Give me one moment, I will find previous slides.
Yeah. So we saw that this is actually the preliminary, this is the first verse of the Brahma Samhita, and because the entire book is essentially about Krishna, so this first verse begins, or the book begins, by chanting Krishna's name. Yeah. So can we move on? The screen is dark now.
We can't see the slide itself, Pranash Guru.
Last time there were the same that was shown last time. Yeah, so this was probably the second last one. Yes, correct. So, another one before that. Yeah, the one before that. No.
The one with
the text, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Yes, we'll hold it there, thank you. So this is the first verse, and it's probably the one verse in the Brahma Samhita that everybody, all devotees, surely know. It's the most important verse. We discussed this briefly last time, and we'll discuss it in detail this time. Actually, as I mentioned last time, This book has been commented upon by Srila Jiva Goswami, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has indicated that he was asked by his spiritual master to write a commentary in the Bengali language along the lines of Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur did that, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur then wrote a commentary on the Brahma Samhita in English, closely following the commentary of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So if you look at the two commentaries, one by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the other by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, we will see that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's commentary very closely resembles that of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. His commentary. So, I'll be essentially moving between the two, between Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur's commentary. I think the screen has again, we've lost the content. Yeah. So, and occasionally I will take references from Srila Jiva Goswami's commentaries which have not been reflected in the commentaries of Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, only very minor points. Now, as I also mentioned last time, that Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary on the first verse, this verse that is up on the screen, constitutes almost 25% of his commentary on the entire text. So he has written many pages of commentary on this just one verse, on this one verse, and he has explained and analyzed each word of this verse. So naturally, we will not be getting into such detail. We don't have that time because we have to cover the whole text of 63 verses in just 4 sessions. And the last session was more like an introduction. So this is the verse. After a brief discussion of this, now what we will do, having stated that this is the most important verse, I'll come to the next verse which describes why this verse is considered the most important one. So can I have the next slide, please? Okay. So now I'll introduce the concept of a Paribhasha Sutra. A sutra is a short statement. It's like an axiom, a key definition. Paribhasha refers to definition of defining. So the defining axiom or the defining, shall we say, statement is Paribhasha Sutra. So in any Sanskrit text, essentially a devotional text, a scriptural text, it is a verse that defines the purpose and scope of a book. It is the theme or the seed verse of the book. It presents, not presents, it presents, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, the conclusion of the book. The screen is getting covered by something.
Ramesh Prabhu, yeah. I think there might be other little windows on the laptop. So when the other windows open up, it appears like grey blocks.
Okay. You are right. I open chat and then you see what messages I got sent.
So if you're able to open them sort of on a different screen or I'll kind of monitor them. So, dear, okay. if there's any messages with technical issues, please send them to me so Pranash Prabhu can concentrate on sharing the screen for Maharaj in terms
of
slides.
So the Paribhasha Sutra normally appears only once in the book. And essentially, it explains the proper method for understanding the book. So, most texts have this Paribhasha Sutra. You know, whether it's the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, etc. So can we have the next slide?
I just got sent new slides by your servant, Anand.
Okay. You received the slides, right? Okay, so what I'll do is, like for example, you can keep the Paribhasha Sutra slide on then. No, the Paribhasha Sutra one, one just before that, yes. So now, for the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Paribhasha Sutra, it's the 8th verse of the 10th chapter. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitah. Essentially, in which Krishna explains that he is the source or the origin of the spiritual world as well as the material world. Everything emanates from him. And one who understands this in truth serves him with great devotion and faith. So this is the seed verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, some Gaudiya Vaishnavas also speak about Manmana Bhagamad Bhakto in the 18th verse as being a Paribhasha Sutra from the point of view of rasa or mellow, transcendental mellow. And then we have Srimad Bhagavatam, where we have the very famous verse, Ete Cham Sakala Punsas, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, Indrari Vyakulam Loke Mridayanti Yuge Yuge, which is from the first canto, the third chapter, the 28th verse. This is considered the Paribhasha Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because in this it is indicated that Krishna is the origin of all avatars, and he descends time to time in this material world to destroy the enemies of Indra, to destroy those who are demoniac. So this is the very defining verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we understand this verse, then everything becomes very clear. And this has been accepted and stated by our acharyas. Similarly, in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we have this book of this verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulina Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttama, which defines unalloyed devotional service. Anyabhilashita Shunyam. So that very famous verse is the Paribhasha Sutra for the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Similarly, for the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a Paribhasha Sutra, which is 1.1.4, that means Adi Leela, first chapter, fourth verse, Anarpita Charim Charat Karunaya Vatirna Kalau, etc., which indicates why the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, we won't get into the details of each of these verses. Suffice it to say here that each of these very famous and important texts do have what we call the Paribhasha Sutra, the most important, defining and key verse. So similarly, for the Brahma Samhita, the first, shall we say, the verse is actually the Paribhasha Sutra. So this is how we can understand the importance of this verse, and that is the reason that Srila Jiva Goswami has written such an extensive commentary or a purport to this verse. And he has analyzed, as I said, every single word in this verse. So now we've spoken about this. Now let's get back to the other slides. So now we'll begin discussing the first text. Okay? Yes. So, in this first text, we see that Krishna, also known as Govinda, has many characteristics or is understood in the following different ways. So this is all mentioned in the first verse, that Krishna or Govinda, number one, is a Supreme Lord, number two, that he has an eternal blissful spiritual body, number three, that he is the origin of all, number four, that he has no other origin, and lastly, that he is the prime cause of all causes. So, is the Supreme Lord indicates Ishwara Paramaha. So, he is Ishwar controller, Parama means Supreme. Interestingly, Srila Jiva Goswami also mentions one point. He splits up the word Parama, which in general means Supreme, to indicate two words, Para and Ma. Para indicating Supreme, Ma indicating Mother, and thereby saying that Parama indicates the goddesses of fortune or his potencies. So, Krishna is not only the Supreme Controller, and he is the controller because he has innumerable potencies which are all personified. That's an interesting point that Srila Jiva Goswami makes. And he has an eternal blissful spiritual body, Satchidananda Vigraha. He is the origin of all, Adi. He has no other origin, Anadi. Is the prime cause of all causes, Sarva Karana Karanam. So let's discuss each of these. So this is actually, this verse is one of the fundamental definitions of Supreme Absolute Truth or God. Of course, Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam has elaborated on the idea that the common conception of God is fairly limited, and therefore Prabhupada prefers to use the phrase Supreme Absolute Truth, or sometimes he uses the word Godhead to indicate that he's not just any God, because people believe in so many gods, but he's the ultimate Supreme Godhead. So this verse actually defines what it means to be God, what it means to be the Supreme. First, fundamentally, one has to be the origin of everything in order to qualify, so to speak, to be God. Nobody except God can qualify to be God. So he himself must have no origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. And then he is the Supreme Lord because he is the perfect controller. So this is as far as the overview of the first verse is concerned. Now we'll get into specific points of the purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, we'll try to closely follow that. So I'll take the first few points in the purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions, now if you have the book with you, you can keep it in front of you, and I would recommend that because it will help you to follow this better. And naturally this course is only for those who have been around in Krishna consciousness for a while and who are very serious about Krishna consciousness. So, the first point that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes is that Krishna with his eternal name, not focus, form. Sorry, there are some printing mistakes here. So Krishna with his eternal name, form, qualities and pastimes, is supreme amongst all entities. Second, that the name Krishna itself proclaims his supremacy by virtue of his qualities, or his quality of attracting the love of all entities. So, why is Krishna supreme amongst all entities? Because he has an eternal name, he has an eternal form, he has eternal qualities, and he has eternal pastimes which are incomparable, which are unparalleled, which are unequaled, unrivaled, which are unique and par excellence. So there is nobody who has names, forms, qualities and pastimes. Naam, Roop, Guna, Leela, like Krishna does. And the very name of Krishna himself, you know, proclaims his supremacy by virtue of his main quality of being all-attractive. What does it mean to be all-attractive? It means that one attracts the loving propensity in all others. So, because Krishna, by his very nature, attracts everybody to love him, so that is the characteristic virtue of his, by which we understand him to be supreme. So, his supremacy is proclaimed by his very name. And because Krishna is the main form of Godhead, from whom all other forms of Godhead also emanate, therefore the name Krishna is also the most important name amongst all names of Godhead. So I'll repeat that. Just as Krishna is the main form of all the forms of Godhead, the most important form, similarly, his name Krishna is also the most important name amongst all the names of Krishna. Okay? So, okay, now can we have the next slide, please? Now we're discussing just the purport, okay? Main points from the purport. So, no, previous one, please. Yeah. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is speaking about Krishna's form, because that is the main topic of this first verse. He says, Krishna's form is concentrated eternity, consciousness and bliss, which we know as Satchit Ananda. Satchit Ananda we are all familiar with. The important word here now to note is concentrated. And we'll see the significance of this a little later. But just picture in your mind the word concentrated. You know, we say concentrated hydrochloric acid or concentrated something. So it's very intense, very dense. So Krishna's form is made up of eternity, consciousness and bliss. In very concentrated, in a concentrated manner, very densely. So that is the stuff or the substance of which Krishna's form or body is made. So Krishna's form is two-armed and human-like. Now the word human-like is important. So Krishna appears to be like a human. He has two arms, two legs, he has two ears, two eyes, lips and teeth and tongue and nose and face and body that resemble a human being. But it doesn't mean that he is a human being. Even though the form of Krishna with which we are all familiar resembles that of a human being, and it is that which is the eternal form of Krishna, we must also know that this form is actually not a human form. It is Krishna who is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this phrase human-like as opposed to human is important. Many people in India consider Krishna to be just a powerful human, but that is not the case. One should not make the mistake of imagining Krishna to be a human just because he looks like a human. Rather, it is humans who are made in the image of God. You know, that is what the Bible says, that, you know, man is made in the image of God. So then naturally God has a form. If humans have a form, which they do, then God also has a form. But his form, even though it appears superficially like a human, is actually not so. He's transcendental. Then next, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, his form is very charming and all attractive. And he has a heavenly dark blue hue. Hue means a color. So Krishna has a heavenly dark blue color, and we all know that this specific shade of blue is found in a newly formed monsoon cloud. So that's specifically the kind of shade of blue that refers to the complexion of Krishna. So why does he appear like this? Well, that's his choice. He prefers to appear like that. Another point of Krishna's form is that he holds the flute with his hands, and he is medium sized. He is neither too big nor is he too small, and this specifically refers to when he appears within human society. How big he appears when he is in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world is another question that we cannot estimate, because we do not have any sense or any conception of space and time and how they operate in the spiritual world. So we have only our experience in the material world to relate to. So when it is said here that he is medium-sized, it indicates he is medium-sized when he appeared within human society. He wasn't too tall, he wasn't too short, he was just medium. And also another point about Krishna's form is that the form has transcendental senses and qualities. Now, the important point here is that Krishna does not possess bodily form like that of an ordinary living entity. That I have just stated, that is, even though he's human-like, he's not human. So in what way do we understand that Krishna's form or Krishna's body is different from the way our body is constructed? First and foremost, there is no difference between Krishna's body and Krishna's soul, because he is absolute. So Krishna is all soul, so to speak. Whereas for us, living in this material world, our soul is different from the body. So there is a clear distinction between the two, and this is one of the first things we hear when we become devotees, the soul and the body. The second difference between Krishna's body and ours is that Krishna's body and all his senses are transcendental. Our senses are not transcendental. The third point of difference is that any of his senses can perform the work of any other sense in the body, which is what we experience every time we offer food to him, bhoga. So, Krishna can eat with his eyes, he can smell with his ears, he can do anything he likes with any organ or any sense of his body. Okay, can we have the next, please? Yeah. So continuing with Krishna's form, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has mentioned that the form of Vishnu manifested within the material world is an expanded portion, not position, please. Sorry, there's a mistake here. Expanded portion of Krishna's form. Okay? So Krishna has multiple expansions, and expansions of expansions, and expansions of expansions of expansions, and so on. So Vishnu is an expanded portion of Krishna's form. So Vishnu does emanate from Krishna's form, but not directly, through the various expansions, and we won't get into that in detail. And Krishna's form, secondly, is identical with Krishna. So, what we mean by this, the self and the form of Krishna are identical. Not self of form, but it should be self and form. So, Krishna is identical with his body, with his soul. So, Krishna's body is identical with himself. But in our case, we know that we are not the body, right? The first thing you were told when you came to a Bhagavad Gita classes, you are not this body, right? But Krishna is his body. That's a very important point of distinction. So Krishna's form is identical with him. And finally here, the impersonal Brahman, which is also Satchidananda, is unconcentrated. Actually, an important word has been missed here, which is very, very important. The impersonal Brahman is the effulgence of this form of Krishna, that is Brahmanohi Pratishtham, as he explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Just as the sun emanates sunlight, Krishna's transcendental form emanates this radiance, this spiritual light, which we call the Brahma Jyoti or the impersonal Brahman. But please note, you can make this, write this down in your notes if you like, that there is one word that's missing here, which is the impersonal Brahman, which is unconcentrated Satchit Ananda. Okay? Now you remember when we spoke of Krishna's form earlier, we had spoken of Krishna's form as being concentrated Satchidananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss. And the impersonal Brahman is being described by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as being unconcentrated Satchidananda. So please note the difference between the form of Krishna and the impersonal Brahman. The obvious difference is that Krishna has a form and the Brahman doesn't. Impersonal Brahman doesn't have a form. But in terms of composition also, we know that Krishna's form is concentrated Satchidananda and the impersonal Brahman is unconcentrated Satchidananda. And that is merely the effulgence from Krishna's form. So therefore, Krishna's form is the origin of both the super soul, the Vishnu forms of the Lord, as well as of the impersonal Brahman. And Srila Jiva Goswami in his commentaries has asked this question rhetorically. If Krishna is all attractive and filled with supreme bliss, then must he not be formless? After all, forms do not contain bliss. So this is an important question, because our experience in the world shows that bodies that we have, the bodies of living entities, are not sources of bliss, they are sources of pain. So the question arises that if Krishna is indeed all attractive and filled with transcendental bliss, it stands to reason that he must be formless. So why do you say he has a form? So Srila Jiva Goswami answers that by saying that yes, forms within the material world are not full of happiness, they are full of distress. But Krishna's form, however, is spiritual and therefore it is filled with transcendental bliss. So can we have the next slide, please? Okay. So, we are still continuing with the main points of the purport of text 1. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained, as a Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, that Krishna has many pastimes. Now, Krishna's names are given to Krishna by his devotees on various grounds. One of them are One of the grounds is his qualities. Let's say he's very merciful, he's very kind, he's very loving to his devotees. So we may have names like, for example, Bhakta Vatsala, one who's very affectionate to the devotees. So qualities are one of the criteria or the grounds on which names are given to Krishna. And another very important ground on which Krishna is given names by his devotees is his pastimes. So depending on the kind of pastimes that Krishna performs, he gets various names. So as the lord of the cows, he is called Gopati. As the chief of the cow herds, he is called Gopapati. Because of the diacritic marks, there is a bit of an issue here, but you can, the way I'm pronouncing it, you'll be able to understand it. As a consort of the milkmaids or the gopis, he is called Gopipati. As the lord of the terrestrial abode Gokula, that means that part of Vrindavan which is manifest here within the material world, Gokula, he is called Gokulapati. And as the lord of the transcendental abode Goloka in the spiritual world, he is called Golokapati. So in this way we see that Krishna has many, many quality pastimes in Vrindavan, and according to these pastimes he has so many different names. And then can we have the next slide, please? Okay. So what we'll do is, after I finish this, discussing this verse, then again we'll leave the floor open for some questions before we move on to text 2. Now some of the important verses I will take longer, I'll take more time to discuss that, and some of the others as we go along I may deal with it very briefly, because ultimately we have to cover 62 verses, 63 verses in this session. So the last line of the first verse is Sarva Karana Karanam. So the prime cause of all causes. Karana refers to cause. So Krishna is the root cause of the predominating and predominated agents. So the predominating agents are the Purusha avatars. Okay, not Puruna, Purusha. So we're sorry about the typos here. Just bear with me. So the Purusha avatars, okay, and the Purusha avatars, as you know, are Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. They are called predominating because they are in the category of Vishnu Tattva, of God. So they are predominating. Anyone apart from the predominating category is in the category of predominated category, which is basically Maya Shakti and Jiva Shakti. So the material energy and the individual spiritual living entity. Both of these are energies of the Lord, and they are meant to be utilized in the service of the Lord. So therefore they are called predominated. Now both of these are agents, so to speak. Even the Purusha avatars, being expansions of the Lord, are his agents to perform his desire, to fulfill his desire, to perform his functions. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also says that the predominating portion of Krishna, not position, the predominating portion of Krishna, Mahavishnu, by his glance, induces the inferior potency to create the mundane universes. So we all know that Mahavishnu lies down in the causal ocean and glances at the Pradhan. Pradhan is the unmanifest material energy. And by his glance, he induces various transformations to happen. And by the continuing effect of his glance, the inferior potency, the material energy, then goes on to create the mundane universes. So, And finally, the unlimited jivas, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, are the marginal potency rays of effulgence emanating from this predominating portion, not position, portion of Krishna. So we can see that he is the cause of all causes. He is the prime cause of not only the Purusha avatars. He is not only the cause of the material energy. He is also eventually the cause of all the living entities, the spiritual souls. So which means that he is the creator of the universe and the origin of the Purusha avatars. Okay? So, I think we'll stop here. We've covered the first text. Are you able to see me without any disturbance? Is there any lack of synchronization between my audio and video as you see me?
It's syncing very nicely, Maharaj.
Okay, so fine. Fair enough.
The video is very nice.
Okay, fine. Okay, so I think I'll leave the floor open for some questions. Okay?
Sorry, Maharaj, having just said that, it's gone out of sync a little bit for me. I don't know if the others, just slightly. It's not.
Can we have the dongle? Sure.
I'll
just try to switch my internet, okay? Just hold on.
I'm getting a message from a couple of devotees saying it's fine.
Yeah. I'm just trying to switch the internet to see if I get better quality of reception, okay? So just bear with me. Okay. Okay, so can we have the first question?
Charlotte Mataji, would you like to ask? And then Dharmendra Prabhu? And anybody else, please raise your hands in readiness as well.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. The impersonal Brahman as the effulgence of the Lord, I get a little bit confused because I'm understanding this as being outside the material realm. But when the Lord talks of pervading the material world in unmanifested form, I don't quite understand, because I understand he's in every atom, but he has a form in every atom. So I'm just trying to understand what's meant by when he's unmanifested within the world, if the effulgence is outside the material realm.
As you know, Krishna, or the Absolute Truth, has three manifestations according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. One is Bhagavan, the second is Paramatma or Super Soul, and the third is the impersonal Brahman. So, as Bhagavan, he is the original Lord Krishna. He is present eternally in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. As the Paramatma, he is in the heart of every living entity and also within every atom. And as every, as the impersonal Brahman, he pervades the entire spiritual world. But also because the material world is a small part of the entire creation, one quarter, so the material world also is essentially floating in the impersonal effulgence, so to speak. And it is the impersonal Brahman also here that then eventually, as Mahat, then undergoes, is responsible for many of the goings on or the events that happen within the material world. So that is how the impersonal Brahman acts within the material world. It is also the foundation. Ultimately, of course, unless the person, Supreme Lord, that is Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, act, then it doesn't happen. But the impersonal Brahma Jyoti is like the foundation for that. Okay? For the way the material world, the light, for example, of the sun and the moon, etc. Any other question?
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Ramendra Prabhu, would you like to ask, or shall I can ask on your behalf, please?
I'd suggest, okay, I'll ask the last question as opposed to the one that I'm thinking of. I've posted a few questions, Maharaj, and one is following up on last session, but if I could send it over, the group could send it over to yourself rather than me asking at this point in time. What I was asking last, my last question was that you mentioned about the predominating Shakti. Is the Maya Shakti, does it have different qualities to the Jiv Shakti? And if so, how does that manifest, basically?
So, the Maya Shakti, or the material energy, the inferior potency of Krishna, is not of a spiritual quality. The Jiva Shakti is of a spiritual quality. The material potency alone cannot function. It needs the Jiva Shakti to operate. So therefore in Bhagavad Gita we hear Yayedam Dharyate Jagat, that it is the individual living entities that who uphold the whole material creation. Because if there was only the material energy but no spirit souls, then there would and there was no other conscious entities, then this material world would just be dead matter, that's all. So therefore this is the fundamental difference between the material energy and the Jiva Shakti. But of course we know that underlying or behind the material energy are personalities. There is Maya Devi, who is the great goddess, the great devotee of Krishna. But essentially the energy is insentient, whereas the Jiva Shakti is sentient. Okay? So there are some questions here which have been posted. Is the name Krishna more important than Radha? Well, it depends from which point of view you speak. Both are important for us. Therefore, we say Hare Krishna. So, it indicates that the energy and the energetic are both important. When they are together, the Absolute Truth is complete. So, Krishna includes everything within himself. And when Radha is put before Krishna, then it becomes complete. Second question. If the soul is eternal and Krishna is also eternal, then how to understand that the Jiva is part and parcel of Krishna? Well, yes, the Jiva is eternally part and parcel of Krishna, because the idea of material time cannot enter into discussions in the spiritual world. So we cannot say at what time this happened. When did this happen? Okay. So when we're speaking of eternal entities, then the relationship amongst them is also between them is also eternal. So the jiva, being a part and parcel of Krishna, is also an eternal fact. Third question: if Paramatma is four-handed Vishnu form, then is it different from Kshirodakshay Vishnu, which is in between every atom? And also, does that mean that there are many Kshirodakshay Vishnus in the material body? Yes, these are all expansions of Lord Vishnu's forms. And they occupy, they're there within every atom, without which the atom cannot function, the individual living being cannot function. Okay, so yes, there are Vishnu forms everywhere. Therefore, the devotees of the Lord like to respect all living entities and anything in nature. Even if it's inanimate, they understand that actually the Lord is present within as the super soul, even in the atom. So there is a certain divinity attached to nature because of this kind of conception. Okay, next question.
Raj Prabhu, would you like to ask?
Sorry,
Maharaj. I think Raj Prabhu has a question.
Yeah. Does it mean we are parts and parcels of Mahavishnu? Ultimately, we are still parts of Krishna, but is Mahavishnu our immediate source? Yes, that is what this last part of the purport would indicate. Please note that there is no difference between Mahavishnu and Krishna in one sense, because Mahavishnu is the same Krishna. It is just Krishna's expansion. It is just Krishna who has taken on a different mood and a slightly different form. And that is why we consider Mahavishnu as a distinct personality, which he is. But essentially Krishna, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Ram, Narasimha, they're all one. So they're all one Krishna who has expanded himself into these various forms to fulfill various purposes. And the next question is, how can I realize that the name of Krishna is the same as Krishna? That is what it means to be absolute, which may be hard for us to conceive because we do not have an experience of this understanding. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of water. So when we are thirsty and we say, I want water, 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 our thirst is not quenched, because just simply saying the word water is not going to quench our thirst. We need the physical substance, water. And when we drink it, then our thirst is quenched. However, in the spiritual world, the object and the name are non-different. So if someone says water, water, immediately he gets water on his tongue. So that's the same with Krishna. You say Krishna, Krishna, and Krishna is there on the tongue. So that is how we understand that there is no difference between Krishna and his name. Okay, so I think since we've covered many of the questions, we'll go ahead.
Maharaj, could I ask a very quick clarification question, if possible?
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. So when we're comparing the concentrated qualities, you know, and potency of Krishna in his original form versus the impersonal, are we talking about the quantities of qualities and opulences, or also the quality? Is it mainly the quantity?
You'll have to say that again.
Sure, Maharaj. So when we're, you know, when we're comparing, or we're understanding and contrasting the difference between concentrated and unconcentrated. So concentrated for Krishna's original form, and we saying unconcentrated for the impersonal form or impersonal energy. Is the difference between concentrated and unconcentrated down to the quantity of opulences and energy and characteristics of Krishna, or does it also include the quality as well?
Both.
Both.
It is the sheer density. The density and the quality and the intensity. The stuff of which the impersonal Brahman is made and Krishna's form is made is the same. It's the same substance, spiritual chinmaya stuff, Satchidananda. But for Brahman it is rather dispersed. For Krishna it is very, very concentrated and in a form. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, so I think we'll move on then, and we'll come to yes. Now you remember that last time when we spoke about the structure of the Brahma Samhita, we had categorized, or we had divided rather, the entire text into six sections based on the verses. And the first verse, the Paribhasha Sutra, was in a category by itself, being the most important verse. And the second category was, as we have shown in the slide now, text 2 through 6, wherein Krishna's abode manifested within the material world, Gokula, is described. Now, when we speak of Gokul here, we are speaking of the Vrindavan that we visit, that is manifested here within the material world. So that is called Gokula. Okay, so now this section, verses 2 through 6, will discuss Gokula. Gokula is the spiritual world, that planet which is now basically shall we say, which appears within the material world. Okay, so keep this in mind. Gokul is that part of Vrindavan from the spiritual world which is manifested in the material world. Alright, so what we'll do now is we'll have the text. We'll chant the verse. Can we do the next one? Next. Yeah. So, just a bit of jungling of the order. So this is text 2. Sahasrapatra Kamalam Gokulakhyam Mahatpadam Tat Karnikaram Tat Dhamma Tad Anantamsha Sambhavam. So the translation reads as follows, the BBT translation. The spiritual place of transcendental pastimes of Krishna is portrayed in the second verse. The super excellent station of Krishna, which is known as Gokula, has thousands of petals and a corolla like that of a lotus sprouted from a part of his infinitary aspect, the whirl of the leaves being the actual abode of Krishna. Okay, so the word Kamalam, Kamala means a lotus, Patra means a leaf or a petal, and Sahasra means thousand. So Gokulakhyam, that abode which is called Gokul, is like a thousand petaled lotus flower. Mahatpadam, it is a super excellent place, super excellent station. Tat Karnikaram Tat Dhamma. And Krishna is has his abode, that dhamma, in that portion of the lotus flower which is in the center. And the whole planet has come about by a portion of the potency of Ananta. Ananta means Balaram. So Baladev. So by a portion of Baladev's energy, we have Sambhavam means to originate. So this planet has originated from a portion of the potency of Baladev. So now in this verse, we see a description of Gokula, which is the Vrindavan that we know, that we visit sometimes, okay, which is physically located within India. But there's a lot to understand about this, even though it seems to be just a physical location. Okay. So can we have the next slide, please? Yeah. So the now Gokul is the one before that. Yes, yes. So what is Gokula? Gokula, of course, first of all, the word Gokula means the abode of the cows. That's the most straightforward and well-accepted definition of Gokula. Go means cows, kula means abode. So Gokul is the abode of the cows. And in this verse, it is indicated that it manifests through Ananta Amsha Sambhavam. Sambhavam means the origin. To generate, and Amsha means portion, and Ananta refers to Baladev, also meaning infinite. So the Gokula that we see here is manifest through a potency It is manifest through a portion of the potency of Baladeva, and it is Mahatpadam. It is a super excellent abode of Krishna. It's not an ordinary abode. It's not just Padam, which is an abode. It's Mahatpadam. Mahat indicates something very great, extraordinary, super excellent. Remember, we are talking of the Gokula, the Vrindavan, that is here, manifested on earth. So that is also super excellent. And Sahasrapatra Kamalam, it is shaped like a unique divine lotus flower that has thousands of petals. So the divine abode of the Lord is shaped like a unique divine lotus that has thousands of petals. And the center of this flower is Krishna's own home. Tat Karnikaram Tat Dhamma. Inasmuch as if you have a fort, let's say a vast fort, a capital city, and in the center of the city you would have the palace of the king. So like that, Gokula is like a unique divine lotus flower that has thousands of petals, and in the center of this flower is Krishna's own home. Now as you read Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary or purport, you can well imagine it's not easy to understand. So I'm trying to make it as simple as possible when I'm putting up the slides here. So, and to give you a picture of this, we have, can we see the next slide, please? The picture? Yeah. So, this is, you can see this lotus flower, so many petals around it. And in the center is Radha and Krishna. And then all the petals around, they are the abodes of the gopis and other associates. So there's quite an elaborate and detailed description. Obviously, due to constraints of time, we can't go into every specific thing of discussing this particular map. So the geography, so to speak, of Gokula has been described here. This was just to give you a kind of a pictorial understanding of this, okay? So now, this Gokula is the seat of Krishna's pastimes. Now, even though it has been described as a lotus over here, later on at the end of this end of this book, in text 56, Brahma describes the lotus as being made or constituted of Chintamani jewels. Chintamani are transcendental touchstones. So this is not a lotus flower that is made of ordinary substances, but it's just made of Chintamani jewels. Okay, so can we have the next verse, please? Now we'll speak about the purport, the main points of the purport. First important point is that Gokula is transcendental. When we go to Vrindavan, we have to go through Delhi or some place like that. We come to the airport and then we drive down, or perhaps by train we get down at Mathura and then go to Vrindavan. So, for those who are sensitive spiritually, they feel the spiritual vibration, so to speak, of Vrindavan, even as they enter into the boundaries of Vrindavan, as Prabhupada explains one time. At the same time, when we enter into Vrindavan, it doesn't look that spectacular, perhaps, as we may imagine. When we think that this is it is the abode of the Lord, is completely transcendental, we may think we have a certain picture in our mind, but when we go there, we find there are, you know, rickshaws and other vehicles that are honking, there are crowds of people, there are all sorts of animals like monkeys and dogs and hogs, and it's not the cleanest of all places from an ordinary point of view. And so much crowd and pollution and all of that. And so we think, how on earth is this transcendental? It's just like any other place. So we should not be deceived by external appearances. We should be very clear that Gokul or Vrindavan is always transcendental. Even though it may appear to be material, it's not because Gokul is material, it's because our vision is material. And our vision of Vrindavan is covered by the curtain of Maya. Therefore, we are not able to see Gokul or Vrindavan for what it actually is. The second important point that is made in the purport is that Gokula is identical with Goloka. So what is Goloka? Goloka is that abode of Vrindavan that is in the spiritual world. And what is Gokula then? Gokula is Vrindavan that is manifested within the material world. Right? So Gokul is Vrindavan here and Goloka is Vrindavan there, but the two of them are completely identical. There is no difference between Gokula and Goloka. Some slight differences when it comes to the nature of the pastimes, we'll discuss that as we go along. So this is the second important point, that we should not think it's material. And even if you think it's spiritual, we should not think it to be an ordinary spiritual place or an ordinary dham. It is non-different from the original Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. The next point that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes is, and I'm trying to summarize the purport for you and presenting it in very simple language, that Baladev or Balaram is the reservoir of the infinite, ever expanding, not even expanding, ever expanding potency of Krishna. And it is from Baladev, or rather, it is from a portion of Baladev's infinite potency that the Gokula planet, or the Goloka planet for that matter, has been manifested. So, Baladev serves Krishna in many ways. He also serves him as his bed, as his personal paraphernalia, etc. He also serves him by becoming Goloka, Goloka Vrindavan. So the whole abode of Krishna is actually a manifestation of Balaram's or Baladeva's potency. It's a very, very important point for us. And Baladeva's, he's called Ananta, which means unending. So Balaram's infinite aspect covers not just the spiritual world, but it also covers the material world. So a portion of Balaram's potency that is responsible for the existence of the spiritual world and also the material world. Okay? Yes, can we have the next point, please? Yeah. So, further, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur goes on to say, that the spiritual world is three-fourths of the totality of all creation. There is the spiritual world and there is the material world. Two of them put together constitute the entire creation. So of the total creation, three-fourths is the spiritual world and one-fourth is the material world. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta describes that the spiritual world is a place where there is no lamentation, death, doubt, suffering, and so on. It is effulgent. And it is effulgent naturally. And as we will see later on in this book, there is no need for any artificial lighting or even any sun or fire or anything like that, because every atom there, every speck is effulgent. And it is majestic. The whole spiritual world is majestic. This majestic spiritual world is called Vaikuntha. It is vast, it is huge, unimaginably huge. It is beyond the limits of our intelligence and ability to comprehend this kind of size. We cannot even comprehend the size of our one little universe. Even for us to accommodate in our minds distances of thousands of miles or kilometers, it's not easy. We just know it as a number, but we can't really comprehend it. So, this three-fourths of creation, the spiritual world, is separated from the remaining one-fourth, the material world, by the river that is called Viraja. Also called an ocean, called the causal ocean. So sometimes it's referred to as Viraja River, sometimes as the causal ocean. And it is this water in which the Lord lies down as Mahavishnu. And this is where he, by his glance, induces material energy, a material nature to act and eventually produce the universes. So what we'll do is we'll halt here now for some time because we are almost midway. So we'll halt for about 10 minutes and then we'll come back. Okay? Alright, with everybody? So we can begin with questions. So if you have any further questions, then When we begin in 10 minutes, we'll start with that. Okay? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. So back in 10 minutes, everyone.
That's a break ahead.
Recording stopped.
Ananda Chinmaya